Today in our hot seat, we got Louise Calcutt-Stevens, co-founder and CEO at Ear Candy. Hello, Louise. Good to have you here.
Hi, guys. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, Louise, are you ready? Let's do this.
Ready. Let's do it.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our host today, Gabriel Karnashovsky, Chief Operating Officer, and Joseph Kubowski, CEO at Nimzy Insights.
So, Luis, in one sentence, tell us, what does your company do? And share something about your association as well, please.
So Ear Candy is the world's leading content localization provider in Africa. We provide dubbing, subtitles, and access services in over 30 African languages. Because if you didn't know, in sub-Saharan Africa, over 2,000 languages are spoken by 3,000 cultures. So it makes it a really super exciting linguistic and cultural environment to operate in.
And the association?
Which the EGA?
Yes.
Okay. So the Entertainment Globalization Association focuses on the art and science of localization. I am the Education Committee's chairperson for the third year running, and we focus a lot on how to inform and educate our clients on why localization is important and what good quality localization is versus trying to throw something at it and make it work so you can sell it quick.
Interesting topic. I think this is a great initiative. I wish all the best, and I'm sure this people will love to join and read more about it.
Really exciting, and people really should look it up and join. Absolutely.
Excellent. Louise, what's the first career you dreamed of having as a kid?
So I grew up in the 1980s in South Africa. I'm a woman. I'm white. That unfortunately made me privileged by default. But I was also a C student at best. I was failing math pretty much. And basically, my teachers told me that despite all my privilege, there was very little hope for me. And so I kind of figured out that my best bet was to find a rich man and marry him. So I'm guessing that my first career choice as a kid was to become a trophy wife. My God, how differently things turned out.
Well, luckily, the teachers were not right. And
well, it's funny that generally tends to be the case. Yeah.
We very often have a lot of requirements on our kids, and mm-hmm. we're forcing them to do something that they might not be enjoying, yet they can find their way, I'm pretty sure.
You know, I think I always say that if somebody had have told me at school that there was something called business and that you could, you know, have an idea and run with it and create something out of it, I would love to know how much quicker my growth trajectory would have been over time. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
Thank you. When you are not working, how do you like to spend your time?
With my kids. I mean, my family is my primary priority. And I've got an 8 and a 13-year-old. So there's a lot on the go all the time.
Very nice. If you're given a chance to visit 3 different countries, which ones would you choose and why?
So, I mean, my job and where I'm located allows me to travel quite a lot. It's kind of, you know, if I look back to the last 6-8 months, it's how I've been to diverse places like Ethiopia and, you know, California. So I'm really lucky in that way. But I think the three next trips on my agenda, the first is to Nigeria. I've been before, but my friends always laugh and tease me and tell me that I was Nigerian in my last life. I'm really passionate about the culture and the fact that You know, they hustle and they get things done and they're just super entrepreneurs under really difficult circumstances. So this trip is going to be not so much to go and do business, but to go and visit friends. Lagos has a huge number of fabulous parties on any given week. So it's movie premieres and kind of fabulous events. So I'm going to go hang out with my friends and get glammed up and go to fantastic parties. That would be the first one. The second one isn't so much a country, so it's a trip that we're going to take as a family later on this year. We've called it the Whirlwind Museum Tour. So kind of 6-7 days, we're going to kick off in Amsterdam in the Netherlands and go to the Anne Frank Museum and the Van Gogh Museum and then hot foot it to Paris and go to the Louvre and the d'Orsay and a couple of others, and then finally on to London to kind of go and do all those classic museums. And, you know, the primary reason for that is because it's great to have the privilege to be able to, you know, show my kids in real time what it is that they're learning at school. We took our daughter to Paris when she was a little girl, and I just remember the look on her face when we were walking down the street and she looked up and there was the Eiffel Tower, and there was just such wonder. And I think that that's what makes working hard worthwhile, is to be able to have adventures like that. So that would be the second one. And then the third one's pretty, well, not exciting because it's where I live. Like for me, South Africa is such an important place to live at this given point in time. And I think, we have this wonderful woman who works with us, or she lives with us, and we call her Gogo, which means grandmother in Zulu. And she looks after us, and she's helped me to raise my kids. And she's from Zimbabwe, which is a country next door to South Africa. And it's a wasteland. I mean, it's just been completely destroyed by bad politics and bribery and corruption. But she wants to go home there to retire. And whenever I ask her why, she always says, home is home. And I feel the same way about South Africa. You know, I think so often people perceive Africa to be something that it completely isn't. And so I love being here. It's always my primary country of choice. And certainly when I sit on a Saturday afternoon when the sun is shining, which it isn't today, but the sun shines 260 days of the year in my city. And, you know, you're watching the world go by. It's a massive cultural melting pot of all of Africa. And that makes me know that this is my home. And so that's why I would choose it.
Very nice. Very nice. And you reminded me with the culture tour of my mother, who taught history at the university. Okay. And only at her age of 55, she could first time visit Florence or Athens that she taught all her life about. But thanks to communism, we were stuck where we were.
And that is the blessing that we have, you know, that I'm able to do that with my kids. So yeah.
We should keep that in mind, that the travel advantage and seeing places is amazing opportunity for all of us. Speaking about the advantages, what is the best piece of advice you have ever been given, Louise?
Such a hard question to answer. You know, I have some pearls that I live life by, some of which probably some people would think are pretty crazy. But I would say one of the most important pieces of advice I was ever given is play to your strengths. You know, play to your strengths, especially in business. Manage your weaknesses, don't try and fix them, and then try and outsource them as quickly as you possibly can. Because when you're playing to your strengths and focusing on doing what you do well, success is going to happen a whole lot more. It's never easy, but the road will be slightly smoother. So yeah, I think that would be it.
All right. Thank you, Louise. We've got to know you a little bit better. Thank you for that. Now we have the tough questions coming up, right, Joseph?
I would say so, Gabriel. Let's take it away.
Louise, what inspired you to start your company?
So I technically didn't start my company. My husband started Ear Candy as a post-production facility within the broadcast sector 20 odd years ago. And it was only at a point where one of the big kind of African broadcasters came to us and said, do you dub? And I said, oh, I don't know. And at the time, I wasn't even really in the business. I just happened to be floating in and out. And I said, oh, I have to find out. And I went to my husband and I said, do we dub? And he said, good gracious, no. Although he didn't use those words. They were a lot more choice than that. And I said, but why? And he said, because it's really, really hard. And it was at that point I said to him, I said, well, we're now going to have to learn because this is what I see as a niche. You know, we're going to have to exploit it. And so we've, you know, we've never looked back. Nearly 15 years later, we do what we do.
Does that count as your first breakthrough? Or if not, what was your first breakthrough?
Once we kind of got up and running, because I think, look, I'm naturally entrepreneurial. I come from a long line of more self-employed people, but I knew that working for somebody else was never an option. So I'd kind of systematically opened and closed businesses up until then. But once Ear Candy really took off and we were going through our first scaling phase, I couldn't understand why, you know, we were so busy, that we were billing, but I still couldn't put fuel in my car. And it was at that point that I discovered something called the cash flow statement. And it was in that moment that I realized I had to do something different, because if we didn't change, we'd taken off in a rocket ship, but a rocket ship can crash as quickly as it takes off. And it was at that point I realized this wasn't a joke and I had to learn some real business skills if I was going to make it work and grow the business.
The power of the cash flow statement, indeed. What would you describe as the biggest challenge in your day-to-day work life?
Oh, people, always people. my greatest joy and my greatest frustration. You know, it's about making sure that you've got to constantly be retelling the story so that everybody stays on the same path. So yeah, I would say that for me is it. And because I'm that business person, it's like, oh, look over there, there's a rainbow. And on the way to the rainbow, suddenly there's a unicorn over there. And I want to kind of chase all those things. So it's also managing that process of not overwhelming my people all the time with my new crazy idea and kind of keeping in mind that. So I have to constantly remind myself of the vision. So we just keep on that path and keep on moving forward. Mm-hmm.
Digging a little bit deeper on that strand of thought, aside from the cash flow statement, what are the three main things you spend your time on?
I call them visioning, connecting, and thinking. Like, you've got to take time to think, because if you're just busy, busy, busy all the time and on that treadmill, you don't stop to think about how you can improve and where you can improve. So that visioning piece is about, you know, making sure and keeping up my people on that path, retelling that story all the time, that we're moving in the right direction, especially on those days where things are really tough. The connecting is about connecting to my people, connecting to our clients, connecting to potential clients, and also to people on the continent that are interesting to me. Because I think that I'm an African advocate on every level. So I do like to spend time finding new people and interesting things. And actually, the world is really small here. So you tend to meet somebody and then what's the Kevin Bacon effect? We all kind of tend to know each other within a small group. So yeah, I'd say those three things.
What was the biggest challenge you ever overcome?
So again, when we started to scale that very first time, you know, it just took off. There was nobody doing what we were doing really at scale, if at all, in sub-Saharan Africa. And as the rocket ship took off, so did my ego. And I got really arrogant. And eventually made a very stupid decision, a stupid business decision that ended up costing half of the jobs of the, you know, I had to let go half of the permanent staff of our company, lost the client. So, I mean, we were nearly on a kind of, you know, our growth trajectory was kind of straight up and I flattened that curve in one fell swoop. So the lesson in that, I think, was you know, Ryan Holiday has written a book called Ego is the Enemy, which I only read kind of, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. What a pity I hadn't read it then. So I had to kind of put my ego back in a box, which I padded and locked, and realized that, you know, humility and empathy are really keys to being a good leader and a good business person. And then the other lesson that kind of was a silver lining to it. So the business that we lost had been a very lucrative, it was our biggest account, our biggest client. And what it made me realize is that, you know, if you look at business like a table, I lost one leg and we fell over. So it was at that moment that I realized we had to kind of build the Parthenon underneath us with a whole lot of business and a whole lot of clients and diversity in order to remain stable and kind of build slowly and sustainably over time.
What is the story behind your biggest success?
Look, I think success is a journey in itself. Like, success is not one event or one thing. You know, I think life, I strive to live a successful life. Like, that's my philosophy. So if I, but you know, when I shut my eyes for the last time and take my last breath, I think it will be really about, have I achieved the things that I want to achieve? Have I been the kind of person that I strive to be? And have I had a lot of fun? Like, if you're not having fun, don't bother. I think that my journey so far has been successful because, so, you know, for every step you take forward, you take one back and then you take three forward and one back and whatever it is. But it's about not giving up. Like, there's no such thing as failure. You've got to just keep pushing. I don't think that there is just one success. I think that's just life. That's what you're doing. Right. That's certainly what I'm doing.
Thank you. You mentioned the importance of the team a little bit before. How do you motivate your team?
You know, obviously there is that element of keeping them motivated. I am a big believer, though, that motivation has got to, it's got to come from inside. So I strive to bring people onto the team that I don't need to motivate. We need to stay connected to the vision. But if I'm having to motivate you on a day-to-day basis in order to do your job, you're not the right person for my team. So it's more about listening. And I think that's what I've gotten better at. It's about listening and being empathetic. And making sure that they feel heard and understood, but that we're on the same page and we're working towards the same thing.
What was the most out of the box, left the field thing you've ever done?
Decide to start dubbing.
Fair enough. All right.
Because my husband was right. It is really hard.
What is your pet peeve when it comes to clients?
Oh, hands down, a disconnect with kind of cost and value. I call it, you know, it's wanting a Bloomingdale's quality product at a Costco price point. That drives me crazy. Because you've got to find that balance.
All right, very good. And perhaps the last question here. What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who are just starting their own business in this industry?
Everything is going to take, it's going to take 10 times more time, 10 times more effort, 10 times more people are going to say no to you than you ever thought. The people that you think are going to support you are 10 times less likely to be there when you need them. But you've got to persevere. You know, it's about perseverance. Once you've got that idea, the idea is only the first teeny tiny step. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to have money in the bank. You don't have to be good looking to, you know, to succeed in business. It really is about perseverance and putting in the work. And if you're prepared to do that, and not being afraid of failure, because you're going to fail 10 times more than you ever imagined. So you just got to keep pushing forward, keep pushing forward, keep persevering, even on those days when you want to give up and go home. Because if you do that, the payoff down the line in terms of what you can create and what you can then you know, give back to people in terms of, you know, the quality of your product that you're creating. And in the language service sector specifically, we are doing something that can change people's lives and connect people across the globe. So just stick with it. And I think that would be it. There's, sorry, no technical. I'm a big Tony Robbins fan. He talks about 80% psychology and 20% kind of skill. And I believe in that wholeheartedly.
Very nice. Very nice. So keep to your goals. Don't give up. Very nice.
Absolutely.
Very nice.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Luis, for joining in the hot seat. I hope you didn't sweat too much.
It was great fun. Thank you. I've had a great time.
Excellent. And if anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you are part of the C-suite at the company in the language service industry, sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers, this was all, folks. Thank you for watching and look out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website. Luis, thank you again very much. Very fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.